The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At daybreak, he appeared in the temple again, and as all the people came to him, he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman along who had been caught committing adultery. And making her stand there in full view of everybody, they said to Jesus, "Master, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery, and Moses has ordered us in the law to condemn women like this to death by stoning. What have you to say?" They asked him this as a test, looking for something to use against him. But Jesus bent down and started writing on the ground with his finger. As they persisted with their question, he looked up. He said, "If there is one of you who has not sinned, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Then he bent down and wrote on the ground again. When they heard this, they went away, one by one, beginning with the eldest, until Jesus was left alone with the woman, who remained standing there. He looked up and said, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she replied. "Neither do I condemn you," said Jesus. "Go away and don't sin anymore." The Gospel of the Lord. I think it's hard to find anywhere in the New Testament a more touching scene than to picture the sinful woman standing face to face with the sinless Christ. And the Pharisees asked Jesus to take sides in the contentious situation. Should the woman be stoned to death according to Mosaic law? They know that he probably couldn't stand there and see that happening, and so they were hoping that whatever answer he gives, it'll give them some ammunition to use against him. But Jesus has little patience with the legalism of the Pharisees. They set the scene, as we know, to trap him. It seems to be becoming almost their entire job to try to snare him in one of the traps. And so they're flummoxed by his ingenious answer, because he sides with no one but in favor of the woman. And in a way, Jesus always acts in a way that preserves the unity of God's family. When he dismisses the woman, telling her to go and don't sin anymore, he's confident from the time their eyes met that she won't revert to her old ways, because he sees something positive and lasting in her faith. And so not only has he helped the woman to leave behind her sinful ways, but also his accusers also go home, and they're helped too, because they're challenged to look at themselves and face an honest assessment of themselves. And they all knew there wasn't one of them that was without sin. And so Jesus is doing what Isaiah prophesied in our first reading. "See, I'm doing a new deed. Even now it comes to light. Can you not see it?" Because all of them were changed with that light of Christ upon them. And the new deed that he comes to bring is that of choosing always the side of humanity. The woman, alone with him, he didn't harangue her, he didn't make fun of her, he didn't condemn her. He was kind, he was gentle, and he actually extended to her the opening words that he began his public ministry, that are to everybody: "Repent, be converted, sin no more." And he gives that new lease of life, both to her and to anyone that listens to what he's saying. But he also showed her what compassion meant. He made her believe in the power of forgiveness. Just as many instances in the Gospels, it was the same on the side of Peter, the lame man at the pool, Levi, the prostitute, the lost sheep, the prodigal son, Zacchaeus, the woman in the story. He's always giving hope, helping people on their way. And even nailed to the cross, Luke tells us, as we shall hear in the Passion next Sunday, "Father, forgive them, they do not know what they're doing." Despite his agony on the cross, the compassion for his mother and the beloved disciple, giving them each into each other's care. To one of them dying on the cross with him, he says, "Today you will be with me in paradise." All through, there's that care for humanity and the compassion and the love and the mercy that comes from God. Singing to this Mass, but I have it most to the others, Newman's tremendous hymn, "Praise to the Holiest." Because, you see, it speaks there of when all were sin and shame, the woman shamed before them all, they the sinners too, wherever it is, when all were sin and shame, he chose the second Adam to the fight and to the rescue came. Jesus comes human as the human to the fight and to the rescue. And it speaks to that hymn of God's presence, the very essence, all divine. Because when they meet the Lord, they're meeting God himself. We must never get away from that. That's the great truth that Newman has given us in that hymn, but it's given us, it's there all through the scriptures. When they meet the Lord, this is both God and man. In man, for man, the foe, the double agony, the agony of the humiliation of coming and humbling himself for us. The agony of the cross, that double agony, and yet all of it, God's presence, all divine, with us. So in a way, it's extending to us the great wonder, what marvels the Lord worked for us, because he sent us his Son. But beyond that, I want to take you a bit beyond, and I'm encouraged because there was quite a debate about it afterwards, after the 9 o'clock Mass this morning. The depths of God's mercy, and particularly in our own times, again, sin, but particularly sexual sin, because of all the sins, sexual sin tends to attract the most attention. The tabloid newspaper industry in particular are heavily focused on bringing all manner of peccadilloes to our attention for our titillation and judgment, and of course, increased newspaper sales. As I said, there was quite a debate between the footballer Johnson up in the north, and somebody was saying that one day, of course, the tabloids totally slated him and what he should do, and the next day, they've paid him thousands, to tell his own story. And you see, this is the world, and that's today. And of course, what the media like to do is exactly what they've done, that's what they were saying, and where we can so easily follow their example, is dig up the past. So whatever happens in the present story, we or they can add, but did you know this? And out comes the past. How often, sometimes someone will say something, and if it suits the papers to say it, yes, but 20 years ago, they were saying this. Well, if we all looked back 20 or 20 months ago, or 20 years ago, it could all be very different. And I pick on that because in our readings, particularly the first two readings, they both encourage us to forget the trials of the past and to move on into the future. So Isaiah says in that first reading, forget the trials of the exile in Babylon. Trust in God for the future that he has in store for you. Isaiah says, no need to recall the past. No need to think about what has gone before. And St. Paul, in the second reading, has his eyes so firmly fixed on Christ. He says that everything in his past history, which was, as we know from Paul, it was a rough lad like so many more, and many, many problems, persecuting the church of God. But all that pales in significance. All I can say is that I forget the past and strain ahead for what is still to come. And it's an important part linked by the church with our readings today. That's why I wanted to bring both sides in, because it's not always that easy to forget the past, especially if you've been the victim of hurt or abuse or injustice in any way. We don't have in our memory the delete button that's on your computer. So it's there. It's in your memory. And our option isn't between remembering or forgetting. If we have any option, it's about how we remember and how we deal with forgetting or moving on. Negatively remembering dwells on the injustices and the hurts, bringing up the anger and the revenge and a whole train of destructive thoughts and desires. And of course, the one who suffers most in all that is the one who's holding on to those memories, staying with the injuries. And it's a bit like picking a scab or a scar, and then it won't heal because we prevent it from healing. But positive remembering helps us to draw from that higher power which transcends the injustice and the wrong suffered and move towards healing and new life. These days they talk about closure and moving on and that, but it's the same principle. It's been there all through life. It's there in Isaiah, it's there in Paul, it's there in the scriptures. It's that moving on. And the negative of energies abound in the scribes and the Pharisees as they hurl themselves, in a sense, against the woman. And of course, always remember, it takes two to tango. What's happened to the male partner in the adultery is not mentioned. Why not? Well, we don't know. But it's always just to reflect on. But the accusations against the woman are loud, very negative. And the letter of the law was quoted to cite to trap Jesus. And righteousness without mercy can be very cruel. And that's why St. John Paul II wrote in his encyclical Dives in Misericordia, Rich in Mercy, which he wrote in the early days of his pontificate, these words. The present day mentality, more perhaps than that of people in the past, seems opposed to a God of mercy, and in fact tends to exclude from life and to remove from the human heart the very idea of mercy. Quite interesting. Obviously, John Paul, no fool as well, you know. Why does he write that? Why did he write that in that encyclical? But it was rich in mercy, because he was doing the same as Pope Francis, picking up in this year of mercy, because John Paul goes on. Christ confers on the whole of the Old Testament tradition